Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to the C-Squared podcast with Corey, Curtis, and our supervisor, Holly, who is here to keep us in line because we all know we need it. We are here with music journalist Emma Madden, who has written for a number of publications. Super excited to have Emma on the show today. Going to be dropping some knowledge bombs for you all. So get your notepads out and be prepared to take some notes because you're going to need to. But before we get started, I do just want to say thank you for joining us on the podcast today. We are really stoked to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh yeah, and for the people who may not be super familiar with your work, because we all know people don't always check the authors on the articles, right? Do you want to give just like a brief breakdown of who you are, what you do, and just who you are and what you do, the nutshell version.
So I'm Emma. I live in Brighton in England, and I mostly write about music. I also write about digital culture. I've written for Revolver, New York Times, New York Magazine, and I do quite a bit for Pitchfork as well.
Ah, awesome. Excellent. I was going to say, Holly,
I'm next, I believe.
So, Emma, it would be really interesting to know how you started off in journalism.
Yeah. Are you in England too?
I am. I'm up in Manchester.
Oh, cool. I graduated in 2016 and I got an office job, and there were a lot of spare hours in the day and I was really bored. And so I just started listening to every album that was coming out every Friday and reading a lot more music journalism. And then I started cold pitching. And then just racked up more bylines, and yeah, it's just grown from there, really.
So how did you kind of get into the bigger places though, Emma?
I'm trying to think. Well, I think one of my first big pieces was for Billboard. I got quite lucky with that. It was like, I think it was 15 years. Since the Yeah Yeah Yeahs released Maps. And I really wanted to write about how that song had been incorporated in pop music. So I argued it was like a bridging of those two worlds, the indie and pop world. So I talked about how it was used in Kelly Clarkson's Since You've Been Gone and Meet You Halfway by the Black Eyed Peas.
Yeah.
And that was just a total cold pitch. I hadn't had any experience before that. I think it was a good idea and I got lucky, so.
Fair. So it was just kind of like you just reached out randomly to the editor and it was just like, sure, we'll do it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it was surprising.
Cool. So then how did you kind of parlay that into other opportunities then?
That's just been my method, just cold pitching relentlessly and to as many people as possible. I haven't really stuck with one publication. I do write for some publications more than others, but it's still really exciting to me when I get a new byline somewhere.
Fair. So is there like a particular, because you write about a bunch of different genres and you also have different subjects too. Is there a certain genre that you feel like you kind of are best at, or do you kind of not really mind writing about all the different ones you do?
No, I really, really do like writing about everything. I don't think there are many other journalists who write about metal and pop and folk and techno. I'd say I'd feel most comfortable, most in my wheelhouse writing about folk music. It's sort of what I grew up on. just funny because I don't really get the opportunity to write about it much, but it's not like a very sexy genre. It's not like super commissionable.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's not something that you can really sell a lot of, I guess, is what you're trying to say. So now let's say that if you did want to, this is my final follow-up before Holly's question, by the way, I know I'm hogging everybody. But let's say that you did want to pitch something like a folk piece. How would you go about finding the right outlet to do that? And I assume a place that pays for it.
Yeah, it would depend on the story. Yeah, like I've sort of been wanting to write an oral history of the new folk scene that we had in England in the early to mid 2000s. I've been thinking about pitching that to someone like NPR, but it's not great advice, but I'm not opposed personally to pitching multiple places at once, because as a freelancer, I can't really afford to just wait, you know, 2 weeks for a reply.
Mm. Yep, fair enough.
So, yeah, as well as all of obviously your reviews and everything, you do quite a few interviews. You've interviewed some really interesting people. I've just been having a quick look over your website. So how do you prepare for them, especially if you've got like a really big artist that you're going to talk to?
I mean, I read absolutely every interview, everything they've done. I try to ask questions they probably haven't been asked before. That's just a really fun task for me in general, even just in conversation. I really enjoy trying to think of questions that people might not have been asked before. I'm also not opposed to repeating questions if I've seen that that person's been asked something and they didn't have like an interesting response. I feel like if you ask them again, they might have thought about it in the interim. A lot of journalists would say, well, make sure you don't repeat questions, but I'm not sure that's the best advice either. I've actually got some great answers from asking some pretty like seemingly pat questions. In terms of preparation, it's just a lot of research and just spending time with the music and, you know, letting them know that I have spent time with it and care about it.
How much time would you say is you spend in the prep then?
Days, like a lot of hours. Oh. Yeah. Wow.
Cool. I don't think I have any more follow-ups on that unless either one of you two do.
So what do you think are your favorite types of questions to ask an artist? Like I always ask at least one that's kind of off the wall that wouldn't expect. Do you have any that are like your signature questions or ones that you really just think get people going and get people engaged?
No, I can't say I have like an across the board question. It's really trying to speak their language for a moment and speak their language with them. So I think my questions are usually really specifically tailored to each artist I interview. But the question I always ask at the end is there anything you'd like to add? And 80% of the time it's a no, but sometimes you get some really good bits.
All right, and oh, it's me next. So I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'm also a writer, and I know that every writer has their own preferences for being pitched for either, you know, interviews, coverage, anything like that. So what would you say is your number one tip on pitching Emma Madden? or writing an effective one?
I think it's quite obvious what music I'm into when I develop relationships with publicists. They usually know when I'll like something that they send me. I think, yeah, just get to know the writer. Everyone has certain interest points. I don't necessarily need to be told a story. If the music is good, then that's it.
So I had a follow-up to that, if that's okay with the rest of you guys. So basically, when you're getting pitched for something by a publicist or by a band or something, how do I put this? How can they get you to write it for a specific publication, or is there a way to do that? Do you kind of like have a method where you can kind of like go like, okay, I can accept this for this certain place, like a review or an interview or something? Or do you kind of, what's the process, I guess, is what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, well, it depends on the publications. I write quite a bit for Pitchfork because I can just go to them and say, oh, this is a great artist. I can usually review them. Interviewing artists for Pitchfork is pretty difficult. They're pretty selective.
Sure.
The publicist might be disappointed if they really firmly have a publication in mind, because I suppose I don't really have that much power. Mm-hmm. If a publication doesn't have budget for the month, I don't really have any sway there.
Fair.
Yeah.
So now, how did you, this is kind of a follow-up to this last question, it's kind of not, but how did you land the Revolver cover piece with Bring Me the Horizon? Was that given to you, or you pitched it?
So I actually tweeted that I was going to be in LA, and they were looking for a writer, Ollie Sykes and The Bad were recording in LA, and I've been writing for Revolver for 3 years now. So I'm glad I got a cover story in.
So how did you kind of prep for something like that? Because that's kind of major. That's huge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Bring Me the Horizon, I have been in my life since I was 12 or something. They're a really big part of my school's culture. I remember really vividly just watching them take off on MySpace. And I just think, It's such a fascinating story, because usually the best stories are at the beginning or the end of an artist's career, but in this case, they're kind of having their apex moment in the mid, right slap bang in the middle of their career, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah.
And kind of bridging heavy music with pop music via like avant pop and hyper pop.
So I
was talking with the editor, and they thought I'd be suitable for this story because I usually like to bring like some history to my pieces. I don't like claiming that this is the first time anyone's ever done this. So I like setting up like the historical precedents and context. So for example, like with this Bring Me the Horizon piece, I was thinking about Def Leppard and how they kind of operated in a similar way, wanting to bring heavy music to the pop world. And then Linkin Park, of course. Yeah.
That's kind of fascinating, actually. So this was kind of like the dream article for you, I guess, since you've been following them since you were young.
Yeah, and Ollie's story is really interesting as well. Just coming out of rehab, and he's very open. He was very generous.
How do you kind of go into those types of questions with an interviewee without offending them, if you have a tip on that?
Well, first off, I make sure the first questions are all, you know, pretty casual, easy for them to answer. I'll usually talk about music first. And then in the middle, once we've established some kind of connection, I'll delicately go into it while letting them know that I'm not going to pressure them into answering anything. I find just talking slowly and softly works. That's a method I picked up from Truman Capote. He had this very calming, just very calming mode of address, which has really influenced me in my interviewing style. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Before we get to the next question, I got one final follow-up for you. Who would be your next dream interview other than Ollie, if you could pick anybody
for Lana a cover story? Lana Del Rey, hands down, yeah.
Why?
Because I'm fascinated by her.
Fair.
Yeah, she's my dream interview, totally.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Cool. I think Holly's the next question now.
Yeah. Do you mind if I do a quick follow-up, actually?
Do as many follow-ups as you want.
I interested to know, do you all of your interviews in person or some perhaps over like video calls and things like that?
I'd say I do most of them over video calls, unfortunately.
Just wondering, do you sort of notice like any differences with getting responses out of people if it's sort of like over call instead of in person? Yeah.
In call, it feels more transactional and it's like you can't really work together to get to an answer. I find that it's almost like that it's their monologue. It becomes their monologue and it's not something that it doesn't feel as collaborative as it would in person. So they might not. I find with calls, they'll more often not really address the question or kind of like go off on their own tangent, which doesn't seem to happen as much in person.
Yeah, that's interesting, but I can kind of see how that would, like you say, it sort of just becomes like a one-sided thing. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So my next question for you is, do you have any advice for someone who's looking to get into music journalism?
Yeah, I'd say read. I think that's the most important thing. I think even more so than actually writing. I mean, writing is very important as well, but read every day. Read things from outside of your subject as well. So read like recipes, read sports journalism, read everything, but definitely read books, because not that many writers actually read books, so you will have like a very easy like leg up if you actually read books. And write as much as possible, because it's a muscle. Just treat it as a muscle. And be nice and be just constantly curious. Just question everything, including your own assumptions and prejudices and predilections.
Fair.
It's kind of like that saying, if you want to write, then write. If you want to write well, then read.
Yes. I've not heard that, but that sounds spot on, yeah.
I can't remember where I heard that, or I think honestly it's a variation of something Stephen King said at one point, but it stuck with me.
I have a bit of a follow-up, Emma, because that was our final question, but I actually have a question, because now you write for pretty much only big places, to my understanding. I don't think you write for anywhere small nowadays, is that correct?
I sometimes do. I write. I haven't in a while, but I would. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what I was going to say ask is like, so how, like when you get to a certain point in your writing, how do you kind of, or your writing career, how do you kind of like use that to further promote getting bigger and better gigs when you've already, like, I mean, you've already written for The Guardian, you've written for Pitchfork. Obviously you want to grow and expand your writing. Like, how do you kind of go from where you are now to more, if that makes sense?
Honestly, that's I'm not good at promoting myself, but
fair.
I'm fair. Good at cold pitching.
Yep, cool.
So I still do that. But it's nice. The more I write, the more my work is out there, and I think the more it gets read. And so, yeah, so I guess I've been doing this for 3 or 4 years now, and. Mm-hmm. It's only really been in the past year or two where editors have reached out to me. Mm-hmm. That took quite a while. I don't really like to promote myself too much on social media. I don't spend that much time thinking about it or putting an effort into it.
Yeah.
I'd rather just be a better writer because I feel like the engagement on social media is very shallow.
Fair.
If I was thinking about that audience, I might write in a more shallow manner.
Mm-hmm. Do you kind of, like, when you're cold pitching then, you do it all via email, then I take it you don't use social media at all?
Yeah, no. Definitely don't DM an editor. They hate that.
Fair. So what would be your advice? I think this is the final question, unless anybody else has got a follow up. What would be your advice for cold pitching then? Like, how to get that attention and get the editor to actually open your email / take action to hire you?
Have a good idea that hasn't been written about before.
Fair. And,
you know, use it as an opportunity to write well, show them what you got. Yeah, include some links to like the best things you've written. My formula is just hello !! Hope you're well. That's like mm-hmm. as friendly as you need to be. So yeah. Get like overly familiar. And yeah, just launch into it.
Cool. It's pretty simplistic. Just, hey, how you doing? Bam, yeah. Here's my pitch.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
Cool. And how long do you do it? It's like just like a short pitch?
Yeah. I mean, the ideal length would probably be maybe 4 sentences.
And short, concise.
And yeah, and in the subject line, make the pitch what you think the headline should be. And
cool.
That's a really good way of guiding the actual pitch itself and making it concise, making sure you actually know what you're talking about and why you're doing it.
I.e. have done your research. Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool. I think that's all I got for questions. Corey or Holly, do either of you guys have any more questions? No, I guess.
I'm good on my end.
Cool. I think I'm good. We've covered quite a lot, I think.
Cool. Emma, do you have any final words you would like to impart before we end off?
Doggy. That's doggy. It.
That is the best word. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
What kind of dog do you have? Now I have a follow-up. What kind of dog do you have?
Okay, well, on the side of freelancing, I look after dogs. So
all of the dogs is the kind of dog you have, yeah, then, huh?
I have a continuous stream of dogs. So yeah, life's pretty great.
That is pretty fantastic.
That is amazing. Any other final words, Emma, other than doggy?
No, I would like that to be my final word, please.
You got it. Okay. So with that, party on, Corey.
Party on, everybody.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.